Hello and welcome to this Inside HMCTS podcast. I'm Liz Bryant from the communications team at HM Courts and Tribunal Service. When people need to come to one of our courts or tribunals or use our online services, it's important that everyone can access justice. Some people may need extra support or assistance. At HMCTS, we're committed to removing common barriers people may face to make sure they can access justice at an equal level. Today, we're talking about how we do just that, whether that's working to make our court buildings accessible for everyone, providing reasonable adjustments, or helping people to use our online services. I'm talking with Mike Williams, Deputy Director of Service Excellence at HMCTS, whose work includes improving access to courts and tribunals. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Liz. Great to be here.
I'm also joined by Delivery Director Lisa John and Head of Change Michelle Kelly, who are working at the Royal Courts of Justice in London to improve support for court users with accessibility needs. Hello, Lisa and Michelle.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Liz. Thank you for having us.
And also with us today is Barbara Suarez, one of our advisors from the Digital Support Service, who helps people access support when filling out online forms independently, and Rosie Deegan from the We Are Group, an organisation which supports people who don't have the digital skills to fill out online forms independently. They're going to talk about how we're helping people who need support to use our online services. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Liz. Hi, everyone. Really excited to be here.
Hi, Rosie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hello, it's lovely to have you all with us today. So, Mike, coming to you first, can you tell us a bit about the different ways people may need support when they visit a court or tribunal?
Yeah, of course, Liz. Often when people think about accessibility, it's the kind of the physical access into court. So, how do you get around with ramps or wider doors, for example, for people with physical disabilities, is where the work that my teams get involved with is around the whole range of accessibility. So that might be somebody who has a visual impairment or maybe neurodiverse. So there's a huge range of things that we get involved with.
Mike, you mentioned about making potentially physical adjustments to buildings, whether we're talking doorways or ramps, things like that.
What we do know is that it's not easy to make these changes. A lot of our court buildings are historic buildings and were actually constructed prior to the Equality Act of 2010 coming into force. So although some of our more modern buildings are easier to adapt and you don't have restrictions on those, some of the buildings, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a little bit about the Royal Courts of Justice shortly, are a lot more difficult to adapt.
So one of the ways that we may first hear from someone to know that they need extra support would be a request for a reasonable adjustment. Can you tell us a bit about reasonable adjustments? What are they?
Yeah, of course. So reasonable adjustments are actually measures that are put in place to provide something different so that a user or an individual can actually access and use our services in the same way as a person who doesn't have a disability. We have a legal duty under the Equality Act to provide those reasonable adjustments for our court and tribunal users who do have a disability. We also have a wider duty, actually known as the public sector equality duty, which is to avoid treating people less favourably because of their disability or protected characteristic.
Lisa, can I bring you in here to ask, how can people make a request if they need a reasonable adjustment?
So if an individual coming to court has a disability, or they can get in contact with us to make us aware they should be sent information when they receive the listing notice, which tells them who to contact if they do have to have some kind of adjustment put in place to accommodate their disability. Equally, on our Find a Court and Tribunal pages for the Royal Courts of Justice, there is information about who you can contact in the court if you want to request a reasonable adjustment. There are email addresses and telephone numbers there advising you who to contact.
Mike, you mentioned protected characteristics. Can I just get you to describe what that means?
A protected characteristic is actually a characteristic which is protected by law, and it is against the law to discriminate against anyone because of it. So a couple of examples are age, gender reassignment, disability, religion or belief, or sexual orientation. Now, that's not an exhaustive list, but that is the type of thing that is a protected characteristic.
Thank you very much for that. So, Lisa, you were mentioning that you work at the Royal Courts of Justice, and obviously that's one of the older sites in our estate. So can you tell us, what is accessibility like there?
Yes, you're right. The Royal Courts of Justice is a very old building. The main building was built in the late 1800s. And I think it's fair to say accessibility wasn't necessarily a kind of a feature of the design at that point. So the building, the physical building, presents a lot of different challenges for us. Some of the entrances, have steps and are not accessible to anyone with mobility issues. We also have challenges around the lighting in different parts of the building. So for people with any visual impairments, that can be a challenge. Although the building presents a lot of accessibility challenges, one of the things that we have found is it's really important to let our users know up front that they can contact us if they have any accessibility challenges, and we can do something to try and accommodate those when they're coming to visit the Royal Courts of Justice.
And I believe that you're currently trialling a new approach to that. Can you tell us a bit more about your contact scheme?
So we have introduced disability contact officers in all divisions of the High Court and the Courts of Appeal. And we have, I think we introduced that in 2021. We have done that to try and skill up some key people who can help and support people who have accessibility challenges who are coming to the court. They will act as a point of contact for that individual, and they can they will speak to them, talk to them about what their requirements are, so that we can ensure that we are addressing their particular needs when they attend a hearing. One of the things that we have found is that oftentimes people don't just have one disability or one accessibility requirement. And you talked earlier about reasonable adjustments. It isn't always one reasonable adjustment that is required. It can be multiple. And so having that that disability contact officer and having them speak to the individual, they can understand what those different adjustments are and involve the right people to ensure that those adjustments can be met. So in creating a sort of a network of disability contact officers across the RCJ, across the Royal Courts of Justice, what we've also been able to do is to provide an opportunity for a disability contact officer to speak to their colleagues if they get a request or something they've not come across before.
Michelle, perhaps I could bring you in here. Can you tell us a bit about what kind of extra support you've put in place to help people?
What we found with the disability contact officers is that having that single point of contact means that actually they can provide support to people to, you know, support their individual needs. I think what we've really found is that you can't make assumptions with any disability, and that actually speaking to the user is really important to understand from their perspective what they will require. And that's what we're really trying to achieve with the disability contact officers. So one of the key things that we found has been really helpful is that we can offer a pre-meet. So if someone is coming into court and say that they want to kind of come to the building prior to their hearing to get a sense of the sort of challenges they may face in the day in a less kind of stressful time, we found that that's one of the really most kind of useful things for people. So that is something that we can offer as well. So a disability contact officer can meet the person beforehand, kind of show them the route and kind of give them a sense of the experience that they'll have on the day to hopefully try and minimise any stress that they may kind of be, you know, we don't want to add to people's stress on the day of what's probably a very stressful day already. I just want to mention this one area. So we recognise when we were doing the work on the accessibility programme that, you know, despite us being very passionate about the work we're doing and, you know, building that knowledge that we had of accessibility, we recognised that we weren't experts. So we actually sought the help of the Business Disability Forum and got their consultancy to help us progress the accessibility programme forward at the Royal Courts of Justice. So we gained their input into the accessibility awareness sessions that we rolled out to all staff members to ensure that the way they were pitched was at the right level, the language we were using was correct, and also that all of the kind of the, any of the legal legislative requirements we're referring to was also correct as well, and we gained that feedback and expertise from them.
So Mike, if we can perhaps touch back on one or two things you mentioned before. So we spoke about how accessibility isn't just about making sure that someone can physically attend a court or a tribunal hearing. Can you perhaps tell us a bit more about the human voice of justice? What do we mean when we say human voice of justice, and how do we apply this to information about courts and tribunals?
The human voice of justice is, in real simple terms, about making how we communicate really easy for our users. So we use a lot of jargon in or legal language, and it's actually how do we cut through that and actually tell our users what they need to know in the most straightforward way possible. A lot of communication is often in written or letter form, and what we have done is worked with an external organisation when developing the Human Voice of Justice to make sure that we drive a consistent approach and that our language that we use is accessible. So, for example, a letter that would have gone out might have been two or three pages long, quite a long-winded letter that is full of lots of complex language. A new version of that letter that we'd sent out is actually sectionalized, and it says why the letter's being sent, what it's about, and why it applies. So it's a more simple, accessible letter, so that it's easier to understand and also with the relevant contact details. Posters and literature that is around our buildings are another one where we had a group set up that was known as Poster Busters, that actually looks at how do we make our posters engaging, insightful, and actually accessible as well, so that actually they tell people and users the information that they need, as opposed to having a huge amount of words on them.
And one of the things about the Human Voice of Justice is about continually evolving and improving it. Is that right? So it's not just about talking to people, it's also about listening?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we know that we don't always get it right. And that's why it's important for our users to always let us know when that happens, so that we can try and stop it happening again. One thing that we've definitely learned with the work that we've been doing is actually feedback on accessibility is really key. And actually, as HMCTS, we sit across several cross-government groups where we actually talk to not only other departments and colleagues across the civil service, but actually users of our services as well, to actually gain that insight. A real key group that we're part of is actually the Ministry of Justice's Disability Action Group, where we can actually share our work and opportunities and learn from each other across MOJ. And we're also members of the Business Disability Forum, and they're actually the leading business membership organisation in disability inclusion. So we actually use that group as a critical friend and actually ask for their advice and input into things that we're working on, where we could improve. It's actually been a really useful group, particularly around our internal learning for reasonable adjustments, actually for all our staff across HMCTS, and actually also identifying opportunities for where we can improve work that we're doing across the whole space of accessibility.
And you've mentioned how we might incorporate that into letters and communications that we send out. Is this something that also applies for face-to-face, just communication, talking, when people come into the courts? Is it something that applies at every level?
It does, yes. So Human Voice of Justice is that whole way that we communicate, whether that is face-to-face, written over the phone, or with literature. So it actually applies across the broad range of ways that we may interact or communicate with our users.
Can you tell me a bit about the Sunflower Lanyard Scheme, what it signifies and how it works within our courts and tribunals?
What we haven't done is reinvent this. This is actually an internationally recognised scheme and the organisation, and we thought it was a brilliant opportunity for us to join it. Anybody that comes into one of our buildings can actually ask for a lanyard. So it can be a user, a member of the judiciary, etc., anybody that uses our buildings. And what it's there to do is signify, as you rightly say, a lot of disabilities are not visible. And it's also optional. So some people feel that they don't want to share that they have a hidden disability. But for those that do and may need some assistance, they can put that lanyard on. And it's just makes our staff aware that, yeah, that person that is wearing that lanyard may need additional support, and they can be approached and asked if they do need some additional support, or they can also approach us, and it's easy for us to recognise that then they have an additional need that is not visible.
Michelle, if I can come back to you for a moment, has the sunflower lanyard been popular at the Royal Courts of Justice?
Yeah, so the Royal Courts of Justice was actually a pilot of the sunflower lanyard scheme before it went national in the summer, and it's been really successful, we found, in the Royal Courts of Justice. So each entrance has a pile of kind of sunflower lanyards that the security team can give out to users, and people are aware of the scheme as well through the posters that we've got around the buildings. And we've often seen since the pilot that when people are requesting reasonable adjustments, they are requesting if a sunflower lanyard can be available upon them arriving. So it's a great scheme.
So we have seen a recent change to the law, which has allowed British Sign Language interpreters into the jury deliberation room for the first time as a 13th person to be able to interpret for deaf people. Mike, can you tell me how we've made sure that deaf jurors can serve in a trial for the first time?
I mean, it was actually now back in July of 2022. It was actually a trial at Croydon Crown Court that we actually had our first deaf juror who was actually able to serve in a trial and was aided by British Sign Language interpreters. There was a lot that we had to do to make this happen. And actually, we worked with the member of the jury leading up to the trial to consider many things like the layout of the courtrooms and the deliberation room to actually plan where the juror and interpreters would actually be best placed to sit to actually allow all jurors to follow the trial. We also worked with the British Deaf Association and actually sought their advice on how best we could support that juror to make their experience as accessible and as engaging as possible. The result was actually resoundingly positive, and what we actually got was the feedback from that juror as well, which is helping shape the guidance in that area.
So we've spoken quite a lot so far about people actually coming to our buildings, visiting a court or a tribunal. But of course, many of our services are now online, like, for example, applying for help, paying court fees. But not everyone has the skills or the confidence to use digital services or go online. So Barbara, can I bring you in? What can you tell us about the National Digital Support Service?
So the National Digital Support Service is a service to help users who don't have access to the internet to access online courts and tribunal forms. So it's not just limited to people who don't have access to the internet. It's also for people who aren't confident at all. So we have partnered with an organisation called We Are Group, and they're the ones who help deliver this service to our users. This service helps our users get the support that they need and ensure that everyone has the same access across all our online forms. So yeah, it's things like if you want to appeal a benefit decision, if you need to apply for a divorce online, and things such as making a small claims and going to small claims court.
So what kind of support does the service provide? Both Barbara and Rosie, tell me a bit more about what happens when you contact them.
We go through a triage process ourselves, and then we'll decide whether the end user needs the support. It is because people don't have the network to help them, or they just don't have the confidence online, or they don't have access online. So we go through a triage process, and then we work with a pool or network across the UK in communities, so such as like community hubs, libraries. And then people will come and go over and get their digital support that way. We book in the appointments through the network. We've helped more than 6,300 people between June last year and December 2023.
And Barbara, if someone wants to access this kind of help, how do they get in touch with HMCTS to ask for it?
There are many different ways, which is really, really good because not everyone can go online. So it's a piece of cake. So you can call our courts and tribunal centres and you can explain to them that, you know, you have this form, you need help and you don't have the confidence to do so, or you might not have the internet. But also when you do call directly to our courts and tribunal centres, there is an automated voice that asks you whether you want to speak to someone directly from We Are Group. And then that way you can be transferred straight to We Are Group. And they will talk you through the process, try to better understand what it is that you need from their service by triaging you.
It may be that someone begins the process of using one of our services, they might get started. And it's at that point that they realise that actually they may benefit from a bit of support. So what happens if someone's already begun their journey? Can they still get in touch for help?
For some people, they might go online to attempt this application themselves and they realise that they might not trust the system themselves, or they might not trust that it's definitely gone through. Not everyone understands how to use online forms like others do, and it's totally understandable. But we can then talk you through the process of understanding what part needs support with when it comes to the specific form. The service is completely free to use within HMCTS, and it's free to use if you talk to We Are Group directly too.
I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us today. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your expertise. If you'd like any more information on how we're helping people access justice, please visit the gov.uk website and search for Vulnerability Action Plan. You can also read Mike's blog post on how we're improving accessibility and a post on the Royal Courts of Justice by visiting our blog insidehmcts.blog.gov.uk and search for accessibility. You can also listen to our other recent podcast on neurodiversity and remote hearings. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to speaking to you again soon.